Hello everyone, we have Sanyam Bhutani for an awesome conversation today. He's a machine learning engineer working at H2O AI. He also runs a podcast. So let me just share a screen and go over his profile really quickly. So here. Yep, so machine learning engineer at H2O AI. He runs this Chai Time podcast, data science podcast, 150K streams, 40,000 hours, and he has interviewed many industry leaders in machine learning world. He's also a Kaggle rank master. He ranked in top 1%. So we'll be discussing a lot of tips on Kaggle as well. And he had a data science blog with 1.2 million reads. So you can see he has a lot of achievements. He has been contributing to community a lot, and we'll be discussing things around fast AI, auto ML, his own involvement into various initiatives, GPT-3, and a lot of cool stuff. All right. So Sam, thank you very much for joining the call today.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed your content as I was mentioning offline, and very excited to be talking to you. Thanks for the introduction.
Great. And you have a cool setup that we see in the background, by the way. So that is a setup for his podcast. We will be putting all the links, his Twitter links and the podcast and YouTube channel link in the video description below. So make sure you guys check it out. So let's start with H2O AI. So you are working as ML engineer in H2O AI. So let's discuss, what is this H2 AI platform and what kind of products do you guys have?
Sure. Let me maybe start with the philosophical base of what we do. So we call ourselves makers, and our internal motto is makers gonna make. And what we try to do through that is we also try to empower makers through our products and softwares. Essentially, what we build is called Auto ML, different flavors of automated machine learning products. Our flagship right now, it's called Driverless AI, slightly misnamed. It doesn't have anything to do with self-driving cars. It's an automated machine learning platform, end-to-end platform. I guess we'll dive into this.
So Auto ML, sometimes when I hear Auto ML, I might think it is like automobile machine learning. It's related to cars, and maybe that's why you named it driverless.
I wasn't there in that meeting. It happened before me.
It could be most likely that. So before you go further, if someone doesn't have an idea on what is AutoML, can you just in layman terms describe what is AutoML, and then we can continue on your H2O AI products?
Absolutely. So machine learning, if you were to break down the pipelines in different sections, what Auto ML tries to achieve is automate a few or complete parts of that. So for example, one part is building models. Mm-hmm. You could create a software that takes care of just that aspect. So let's say you want to build a CNN classifier. Now, A, you could sit down, write code in Keras for different examples, compare that, or be a smarter data scientist, just use an Auto ML pipeline and let it figure out, build 5 to 6 different models, and you can just compare the output. So essentially, it's allowing us to be more creative by automating different parts of the pipeline.
Okay. And if someone is not an expert, right? So that person, it will be very useful to that person, because now it takes away a lot of dirty work that we do as a data scientist and machine learning engineers, which is like data retrieval, data cleaning, and all of that. Whereas this AutoML, it's kind of like you can click buttons and it will just do things for you, right? So it just saves Absolutely. You a lot of time.
So what we build, there are different ways of doing this. One is click and get it done. Second is human in the loop. So at H2O, one is the summer intern mode, as we call it internally. If you click launch experiment, it'll take care of everything. The default options are pretty good. They'll get you good results. Or if you're a data scientist, you can also tweak the settings. So let's say if you are a domain expert, you can also fiddle around with that. So it's for both, not just people who aren't experts or people who are experts.
I see. Okay. And we are talking about your H2 AI products. So you can continue on that.
Sure. So our flagship product right now it's called Driverless AI, slightly misnamed, as I said. It's a end-to-end machine auto ML platform. And what it does is it takes care of almost all of the steps in the data science-y pipeline from doing EDA, we call it auto insights, to building models and to debugging models as well, across a few different sections that we currently support. So to simplify it, let's say you're trying to solve a problem and we have customers across many different sectors. So if you're trying to prevent fraud based on credit card transactions, what you can do is just drop in the CSV onto the GUI, mm-hmm. and it'll automatically show you interesting plots and suggest a few transforms. Hey, maybe there's this column that could be transformed. Followed by that, you can launch an experiment and decide how accurate do you want it to be, how much resources in terms of GPU time do you want it to take, mm-hmm. and how debuggable do you want the model to be. So let's say in some sectors you want models to be debuggable. It's not a black box. There are different ways to debugging it, as people may know. And once you hit launch experiment, the software also figures out the feature engineering that needs to be done. And in parallel, depending on the knobs that you've set, you can train, the platform will train about hundreds or thousands of models and bring out a final pipeline that you can simply deploy also and debug also.
I see. So they say like 80% of data scientists' time goes into data cleaning and, you know, only 20% goes into actual model building. So I think platform like yours can help save a lot of time, because for visualization, I don't have to just, you know, code everything in Matplotlib and do cleaning in Pandas. It's done for you. So it's definitely saves a lot of time and gives you more time for creativity.
That's the goal. So that's our flagship product. And we also have many open source ones as well. We also have another platform, open source, that's coming up. It's called Wave, that will allow users to essentially create AI apps of their own. So we're shipping a framework that should hopefully take care of a lot of things that you can build on top of to create AI apps.
Nice. All right. So everyone, yeah, go to h2.ai website and check it out. It looks pretty cool. So I think if someone wants to play with it, they can. Is there like a free version or license version, trial version? Like, how does it work?
I think for students, there's a 6-month license and they can extend it. Pro tip, also use it for Kaggle. It'll get you good results if you're a student. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's a 21-day free trial, I think.
Okay. All right. Many of the viewers who are watching this video are students. So yeah, for you, it's free. So go ahead and download it and start playing with it.
Don't tell your faculties. It also makes great projects whenever you need to submit them and you don't need to do anything.
Wow. Interesting. All right. So what's your role at H2AI?
So my title is ML engineer / content creator. There's a good overlap in both of them. And there are some things outside of that because we function like a startup and we have a lot of independence in the sense that makers gonna make. So there's a lot of freedom to take initiative and do different things. What I've been doing up until recently, I got to interview many of our people from the team. I love interviewing Kaggle Grandmasters. We have, I think, close to 20 Kaggle Grandmasters at H2 at this point. So I was doing interviews with them. And right now I've just shifted to the open source team. So we're working on the platform, as I had mentioned, trying to build a platform and some AI apps for the community to enjoy.
Okay. So your day-to-day life, you're a content creator interviewing people. And in terms of technology and tools, what do you use? You use mainly Python or something else?
Yes, mostly Python for me. I don't, I used to do some Java code in college mm-hmm. when I was freelancing, not so much recently.
I see. And as far as deep learning frameworks are concerned, which ones do you use?
I'm very biased. I like PyTorch / FastAI a lot. So for mm-hmm. deep learning, that's my go-to. I really love scikit-learn and also H2O3. We have our own open source framework, which mm-hmm. also has some wrappers around scikit-learn. So all of those.
Okay, since you mentioned fast AI, can you tell to our viewers what is fast AI and how is it different from TensorFlow or let's say PyTorch?
So it's a couple of things. It's one of it's the world's best deep learning course. Call me biased, I'll fight for that. It's one of the best courses in the sense that it has impacted my life a lot. It's also a community and it's a framework. So three things. All three have a really nice overlap. The framework, it's a wrapper of sorts that also does many things on top of PyTorch. So what Keras used to be TensorFlow, FastAI is to PyTorch plus mm-hmm. some more.
Mm.
So it's been built in a way that it can help anyone who's not even a coder, who's new to software engineering and has some idea of Python, help get started with deep learning and be able to show cutting edge results by just following the course that's there.
Okay. So maybe if you were to write, let's say, 100 line of code in PyTorch, the same thing, you can do it easily here with few lines of code, right? It's like an abstraction over it.
I would say
it.
Less than 10. Yes.
Less than 10. Wow. So if you want to do rapid prototyping, build something really fast, then I think fast AI framework is preferred, right?
Absolutely. And as I said, it also does a few more things. So what the creators, Jeremy Howard and Sylvan, earlier he was on the team, they've done is they've also figured out a lot of defaults after running many experiments. So as a newbie, I don't need to know those details. I don't need to set epsilons or different values. They are already there and they give you that slight boost in accuracy that you don't need to worry about, but it's nice to have.
I see. So you have worked with the creators of Fast AI, correct?
I am very active in the open source community. I don't contribute to the code as much. I'm more active on the forums and discussions right now.
I see. And you're involved with Machine Learning Tokyo as well. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So the reason for all of this, to give some context, is I've learned whatever I've learned is through the internet, through the community. I like to call myself community.engineer. And I really wanted to give back in the sense that I don't consider myself an expert, but I've spent a good amount of time, a good amount of nights on learning all of this. And I just wanted to share it with everyone. So what I do is I try to host 10 to 12 hours of meetups every weekend, sometimes more. At one point in time, it used to be 12 hours every day. I can't do that as much now. And these range from book reading clubs where essentially we decide to pick up a book. Let's say I have this one. If it turns out to be a good book, I'll probably just invite a study group and we'll end up reading one chapter every week. We're also hosting Kaggle study groups. So we compete on older competitions as a group. And then there are different discussions group as well, where sometimes we discuss papers, sometimes we discuss courses. So mix of all things, as you can see.
I see. And all right, now let's talk about your podcast. So it's called Chai Time Data Science Podcast. I like that name, by the way. I see that chai logo behind the scene.
What's your favorite chai? I'm enjoying Kashmiri Kahwa right now.
I like the traditional Indian chai with cardamom.
Cutting chai.
cutting chai that you get on a tapri in India. Yep. You have like a fancy one, Kashmiri one. I never tried it. Maybe we should meet one day. I'll come to your place and we can have that tea together.
Absolutely. Sorry, I interrupted you.
So, no, it's okay. So, what inspired you to start this podcast and what do you teach on this and what, like, whom you have interviewed so far?
So I was told to chase passions in life and I figured out I really like asking stupid questions and I really like chai. So ended up combining these two. That's one way to put it. I actually started a blog series titled Interviews with My ML Heroes, where I would just interview Kaggle Grandmasters, different researchers. And at one point that felt like I was asking the other person to write a blog for me. So I ended that with hope to bring it back. And then after I graduated, I heard of this concept called podcasting. And that clicked so well that I ended up terminating whatever contracts I was working on at that point in time. and started this podcast. So what is this podcast? It's interviews with my machine learning heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for this journey of different people that I really respected, just trying to understand how they have reached to rank one on Kaggle, how they have become the lead of research at an amazing institute, and how did they learn when they were students. I was always curious about this. So this podcast is essentially me interviewing all of my heroes about how did they make it in machine learning, what were their frustrations, more about the personal side of things. I try to keep it not too technical. And it's a service to the community. I didn't want to monetize this. So I put out 2 episodes every week. There are close to 125 episodes right now. And yes, that's the summary of it.
Okay. So we'll provide a link of your awesome podcast in the video description below. You want to talk about some of the people you have interviewed, like some big names?
Sure. I won't say big names because I must say that everyone I've gotten to interview has it's been a privilege to interact with them. For your audience, Dhawal will be on the podcast hopefully in a month or two. So stay tuned for that.
All right, then I should say, yeah, not a big name. Yeah,
I would disagree, but I've interviewed I think close to 60 Kagglers. These are Kaggle grandmasters, people ranked in top 10 in competitions. Mm-hmm. Even the recent former one, previous number one in different categories from the Kaggle world. I also do interviews with researchers.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, when we're recording, my interview with research computer vision researcher goes out. So there are also interviews with researchers, lead researchers. I recently got to interview the VP of research at NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also community ones. So people from FastAI or anyone in the community whose work I've really respected and managed to get them on the podcast. I would say these are the 3 categories of interviews.
Okay, great. All right. So now let's go over some common questions that people have in our viewers. Yeah. So the first question is, what is the difference between machine learning engineer and a data scientist?
So depending if you're talking to someone from a startup or a corporate, there would be different meanings. In a startup world, the terms are used very interchangeably. So if you're talking to an ML engineer at one startup, they might be doing something completely different.
Yeah.
With that disclaimer, I think ML engineering is much closer to software engineers. So as an ML engineer, we're working very closely on the product. And as data scientists get to work much more on just creating experiments based on the data. And then they get to interact with ML engineers as an abstract layer who then talk to software engineers.
So data scientists are involved in short-term projects, maybe 1 month, 2 months, so short project where they build a prototype and they just show the results or show the insights to software engineering team or ML team. An ML team is more involved in like more like enterprise, like long-term product type of software, right? I've seen many companies where ML engineers are involved in setting up ML infrastructure that can be used by data scientists. So that is that difference. Yeah,
I think so. That's the ideal scenario. At H2O, everyone does everything. They're very experienced all across the board. And I know at different startups, things vary, but ideally that's how it should be, I think.
Okay. Now, you are a Kaggle expert. So tell us why Kaggle is important for a data science career.
Just trying to come up with something I just recalled off the top of my head. My first competition, I wrote a post after it. And I realized after competing for 2 months, I learned much more than I was in my third year back then, in those 3 years of engineering. And I had taken close to 50 online courses at that point. All of those things combined, I learned more in those 2 months of competing in one competition.
Wow. So it's an effective way to learn data science, basically. Or it is an accelerated way if you want to learn data science really quickly, just participate in Kaggle, right?
I would definitely recommend it. People sometimes there's conflicting thoughts, but usually anyone who's competed on Kaggle or is active, they always agree that it's a very humbling platform, and there's a ridiculous amount of learning that happens in a very short time.
So talk about your achievements in Kaggle. Like when, so you said you started participating in third year of engineering. So you were in BTech computer science. Like what kind of degree you were doing?
I was enrolled in a computer science degree. Not that I studied or attended the lecture sincerely. I did graduate with distinction. I also got an award, but I just pattern matched my way in the exams. But yes, I was enrolled in a computer science
okay. degree. So third year in your college, you start participating in Kaggle, and just talk about some of your achievements in, on this platform.
Sure. I must give credit to my teammates. Most of these are with amazing teammates. So my strategy was team up with really smart people and learn from them. When I was active for 5 or 6 months, my rank peaked at top 1% and I was able to become triple expert. Now I got master in discussions just because I talk so much. I'm not good enough in the other categories yet. We finished my top finish with the team was, I think, 7th position on a competition. We were able to get to the 7th position. All credit to my teammates, learned a lot from them. But all of these things combined, I took part in 6 to 7 competitions, and that took me to the top 1% in rankings.
Top 1% in ranking. Wow. Nice. So, now you have won some competitions on Kaggle. So if anyone is watching and if the person wants to be successful on Kaggle platform, what are the tips that you would like to share?
Sure. And all of this I learned through FastAI. So I discovered Kaggle through FastAI, and the suggestion was just compete. Just go onto a competition that you like. Spend 30 minutes every day and try to improve your submission. What happens on Kaggle is there are medals. So you get medals based on interacting with people, sharing your code and finishing on a good rank. And you start chasing that because that's a leaderboard. So it's so gamified. You start enjoying that aspect of it. Every night you come up with an idea, you code it, you submit it to the leaderboard, you watch this animation. Kaggle is very slow. Sometimes it takes very long for the leaderboard to refresh. You're sitting there anxiously. Suddenly your rank climbs up 50 ranks positions on the leaderboard and you go to bed happy. Next morning you wake up, you're down 100 positions. Keep repeating that and you find yourself learning a lot. So just spend 30 minutes every day trying to improve your position.
I see. And if you guys want to participate as a group, of course you will be making a team and participate. And let's say you're not finding anyone to make a group of, you can join our CodeBasic Discord server. So there is a link in the video description below. There is a partner and group finder channel. So go there, post your intention to participate in Kaggle channel, and then hopefully you will find some people with whom you can make a team. Yeah.
Community learning is how I've learned, and it's one of the best ways to learn. So absolutely.
I always say that because nowadays what's happening, Sayam, is this AI is booming, right? And there are many people who are already working in the industry. They are like software engineers doing traditional software or mechanical engineers, electrical engineers. They want to join AI and they sit down at home and just, let's say, do some online courses. But I always say that that's not enough. The group learning is the most effective way to learn things faster. So that's why I recommend that they join to this, go to Discord server, find some buddies. And it's even better if they compete on Kaggle as a group.
100%. It's about being accountable. Like Dhawal already has amazing videos for you to learn, but how do you keep yourself accountable? Sure, it's rich information. Are you really going to watch all of it? You'll get bored.
Yeah.
Not bored, but you'll give up some at some time.
Give up. And bored as well. Like if you don't have sense of achievement, like I try to give exercise at the end of my video. Many of my videos have exercise. But I'm not sure how many of them are doing it, right? Instead of that, if you have a group, as a group, you make sure that, okay, in 1 month, we are finishing this Code Basics deep learning course, and we will be completing all the exercises. And then you just hold each other accountable. That
it's,
works.
It's a very fast way of learning.
Yep. All right. Now, I recently posted a video on GPT-3 and I got a lot of comments like people are like, oh, we are going to lose our jobs and, you know, there will be Terminator-like situation in the world. So what are your thoughts on GPT-3?
Sure. I haven't looked at it so much. I only read the hype that went on for the week that it came out. But of course, I try to think. So my take was more about the research aspect of it and the output that are coming out. One of the debates was how much compute and resources have gone into this. So if you put that into perspective, it's very interesting, but not that fascinating knowing how much resources have gone into it. Will it replace jobs? Probably, maybe, maybe not. It's just a language model that's generating very, very promising prose. So if for people that come in that category who are writing descriptions and similar stuff, they may have to improve, and that would again lead to a better GPT-4. And there's this constant debate that AI will allow us to be more creative. For some jobs, I try to think what will be the next creative jobs. Maybe there aren't any as a realistic thought. Some can't be replaced. Some that may be replaced will need an upskilling. So I'm not sure if it'll replace humans, but if it does, we'll have to improve our language modeling skills.
I always say that, see, when computer revolution happened, before computers, there were so many jobs for record keeping. You go to any government office, tax office, you see piles and piles of like files and documents, and people are manually recording stuff. Those jobs are gone, right? So there are, let's say, 10 manual record keeping jobs. They will be replaced by one data entry operator in computer era. So I think similar thing will happen as AI brings more products. Humans will move to more creative pursuits or next frontiers, you know, in terms of advancement. But what we need to do right now in this position is continuously upskill ourselves, you know, keep on learning new things. If we keep on doing the same book record keeping, we will have problems. And GPT-3, so everyone, I'll post a link of GPT-3 video in a video description. Check it out. I have some video demos as well. So it will show you the promise of this language model. As Sanyam mentioned, the OpenAI spent $4.6 million in training this neural network. It's a huge neural network with 175 billion parameters, right? And now it can write essays, poems. I saw one code snippet where it wrote like a short of like a poem or a short story, and it was like so damn good. You cannot figure out that this is written by computer.
Totally. But I mean, to their point, they're also going to be providing an API, but would you pay $5 million for someone to write your essay? Maybe not. Yeah. $15 would be good enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. It can write resumes as well. It can write a simple mobile app as well. That was scary.
Yes. I interviewed Thomas Wool from Hugging Face, who said his favorite model was, I think, BERT, because it was trained more on poetry. So it gives out this cheesy, romantic spin to the text that it generates. So there's also character to these different AI models that we come up with.
Based on what kind of corpus they're trained on, you know, they will have a personality. Absolutely. To it. Yeah, it's crazy. So other than GPT-3, do you want to talk about any other cool things which are happening in the AI world?
Sure. Specifically in research, GANs fascinate me quite a bit. Just because I think they're still very untapped. People think ray tracing isn't that interesting. So anyone who plays games, but what's happening is your graphic card is taking a low resolution game and making it look really better using neural networks. So when you put that into perspective, it becomes very interesting in terms of general applied AI. I think self-driving cars, as much as I love riding my bike, I think self-driving cars are very fascinating to me.
I see. And the trend that I'm seeing is there is lots and lots of research. The pace at which research happens in AI world has accelerated because of many reasons, like cheap hardware, like GPU. You can get GPU, like we both have NVIDIA Titan RTX. Now you can you can train a heavy deep learning job on our computer. Before, it was not possible. Second thing is cloud availability. Even if you don't have physical GPU, you can just rent a GPU in the cloud or a TPU in on a Google cloud. And the whole Python ecosystem, you know, the community. So all these factors are ramping up the research. And we are attending the NVIDIA call, and it was about the augmentation techniques that they have developed. So I think AI is advancing by leaps and bounds in every area, like feature engineering to the model building, even the new algorithms, better algorithms are being built. So
absolutely.
So we are still in a beginner kind of phase of this whole thing, and next 5 years are going to be crucial. I'm seeing that we will have so many huge advancements. Maybe there'll be GPT-4, GPT-5, and who knows what they'll be able to predict.
Absolutely. One of the things, one of the interesting trends from this year that I've enjoyed is trends, quote unquote. We have almost solved supervised learning, if I may, to quite an extent. It's much more developed. This year, quite a bit of computer vision was in semi-supervised learning. So what do you do when you don't have labels on the data? Or how can you take an unlabeled problem and convert it into a semi-supervised learning problem? That's when things get interesting. So when you just use zero examples, or when you just use one example, so zero shot learning, you only look once, YOLO models, those are very fascinating to me.
I see. So basically, if you have less data, even if you have few images, using that you can really build a very sophisticated model.
Exactly, like how humans learn. Off the record, we were just talking about family. And if you look at babies, right, they just, okay, maybe not babies, maybe more mature kids, they just look at something once and they don't need 1,000 images of it to understand that stuff. So how do we get deep neural networks to that stage, right? We still need to figure that out, and we sort of headed in that direction.
I see. Can you discuss a little bit more about zero shot learning?
Absolutely. I haven't, for disclaimer, I haven't created many models around this, just explored the papers. But the promise of this is using zero examples to teach a model something. So ideally, I would just tell you, hey, Dhaval, this is my favorite book. It's called Grokking Deep Learning. And now I don't need to tell you what deep learning is, what grokking is, which is how neural networks work.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you'll be able to learn that. Now you know this fact. Maybe this is a bad example. Ideally, also for different computer vision pipelines, if you just show the model one image and it's able to understand what's going on without... Ideally, you need tens of thousands of images. That's zero shot learning.
Wow, that really sounds very fascinating. All right, now you are a self-taught machine learning engineer. What advice would you give to someone who's trying to learn machine learning on their own? Because as I said, ML is a new field. So if you are in college right now, you have an option to pursue a degree. I think 3 or 4 years back, there was not even a degree in ML, right? Like a few years back, if you're doing BTech, so there are many people, as I said, who are working in software industry, doing traditional software development or mechanical, electrical engineer. They all want to learn AI on their own time using self-study. So what kind of tips or advice would you give to such people?
Sure. And a quick correction. I'm sorry if it was miswritten somewhere. I like to call myself community taught engineer. So I think I've been taught by the community, so to speak.
Oh, and, that's a nice term. I like it. Community taught machine learning engineer. All right.
And to your point, I actually remember the reason I picked up deep learning was I went to my very kind advisors. I'm sure they wanted the best for me. And I asked, I saw this course on deep learning. Do you think it's worth it? And I was told this is for people doing masters or PhD, you shouldn't touch this stuff. It's very advanced. And now the same university has specializations in machine learning. Nothing against them. It takes a while for different things to catch up. So what's been coming to what's been helpful in my journey, I think Fast AI, as I mentioned, it's my favorite course. It was one of the most monumental things that set me off to Kaggle, set me off to blogging, set me off to also this podcast. So all of those things I sort of learned through there. It started this chain reaction. So I would highly recommend doing Fast AI, starting Kaggle, competing on both of them and creating some content around it. That's what I did. You don't have to follow that. You can also watch Dhawal's videos. He also shares great advices. So this is what worked for me, but I think it's also a good way to get started.
And some soft aspects of the learning, which is like group study, right? Group study is important. Holding each other accountable is important and not giving up. I always say that you do project-based learning. Because if you watch, let's say, just deep learning videos, right, for a month, and at the end of the month, if you have not built something tangible, you will not get that like reward. You know, you're not giving that reward to yourself to continue further. Instead of that, watch few videos, start working on a project itself. So after a month, you have a sense of achievement that, okay, this is the project. I have finished it almost like 30-40%. So when you see something tangible being built, it gives you the motivation. And see, that's the reason why Kaggle works so nicely, why we like playing video games in general. Because when you're playing video game, your score is increasing. So that is giving you that mental boost. So the same thing applies in learning. So if you have concrete projects in front of you, then that will give you motivation to continue.
One of the things that worked well for me was I would also announce my goals publicly. So just tweet them out. And these would be like, I want to compete in 2 competitions. I want to complete this Fast AI course. And I want to publish 1 blog on research every week, which I was able to do for a little stretch. So just having that accountability and community, like you said, that can keep you accountable. And if you can't find projects, just sign up for a competition. Signing up for one was helpful.
I've seen many people argue that, okay, first I will learn these skills, then I will sign up the competition. Actually, the order should be reversed. Let's say you don't know anything about deep learning, machine learning. Just go sign up for a competition. And that will make your learning really fast.
Absolutely. All right.
So some great tips there. What skills do you need in order to become successful machine learning engineer or data engineer? And these are like soft skills plus technical skills.
I would say the most important one would be a curiosity. I don't want to create a curriculum. You can always see a curriculum. Hey, you need this XYZ. I think if you have the curiosity, you can just pick things up as required. Of course, there's some prerequisites you need to be good at Python, but you could pick it up if you're just starting out. Hence my point, you need to be good at creating models in general, but you can also pick that up. Maybe you won't get a job until you're good at it, but figure out what you really enjoy. And once you're in the industry, for machine learning engineers, it's important to have a good understanding of different pipelines and different software engineering skills that go into building good products. How do you get that? If you're a student, well, you can't, right? You need an internship. You need that very rough PR comments on your first issue that you open, or on your first PR that you open. You need those rough comments to teach you that, hey, code that compiles isn't good enough. You need to be able to also tune your code to a certain extent. You need to do code reviews. You need to have it up to a standard. For being a good data scientist, having a good understanding of thousands of problems. How do you get that? Well, you can't as a student, right? You can look at competitions. Is that helpful? Maybe. But how do you do that in the industry? Well, you can't do it from outside the industry. Join one. How do you join one? Just show that you're capable of getting there. And then I think just the curiosity is helpful.
I receive many comments saying that Okay, I have done this 10 courses from Coursera. I have updated my resume. I'm applying for these jobs, but I'm not getting an interview call. And it's like chicken and egg problem. Unless I get an exposure, I won't be able to, you know, because people are asking for experience. And unless you give me the offer, I can't have the experience. And the usual answer I give is job is not your only way to work on real problems. Freelancing is another way, or community service. So let's say go to your town and reach out to some NGO and offer your help for free. And these people, I know, like maybe you go to 10 and 9 of them will say no to you, but maybe you will succeed, right? And so offer your help for free, contribute in open source projects. And freelancing is another platform. I did a interview with one person. He's a freelancer data analyst. He's from Pakistan. He became a top rated Upwork freelancer in a period of only 4 months. And he's having amazing career on freelancing. And he had this thing that you mentioned, which was a curiosity to learn things. You know, even if he doesn't know something, he will just still build that project and he would be confident that he will be able to learn those things. So I think those values and those soft skills are more important than anything else. Now, you have done some freelancing projects. So you want to talk about that experience, how you got into freelancing and, you know, what was that experience overall?
Absolutely. And that sort of also ties in with the previous answer really well. And I think I started freelancing with me and my roommate. And we also got to rising talent on Upwork in a similar amount of time. So that was really fun. I think in general, just continuing the previous answer first, getting a job or getting freelance contracts is also about really selling yourself well. So let's say if you're going to buy something, it should solve a problem that you have, right? That's also how someone decides that they will hire you if you can help them out. But how do you prove that point? So let's say Dhawal wants a new editor for his channel. Now, you haven't edited videos before. Ideally, you'd like to show him some work, right? So just go out, take one video of his that you think you can make better, edit it to a better extent and send him a link that, hey, I made this better, I can work for you. Now, that's for video editing because I do that and it was on top of my mind. But you can see that if you want to work at a startup doing something very specific, like let's say they're doing recommender engines, you can just look at their product, try to replicate it and show them that, hey, I've built this small project. I built this by myself in 1 month. But if you'd like to hire me, I can also work on this problem. And that gives them a very positive point that, hey, this person is interested in working on what we just talked about.
That's a very cool point you made, because that shows like you are really serious and hardworking and you are not applying just for the sake of getting a job. You really care about product and you're ready to learn things on your own and put your effort and time in it. So, yep. Anyone listening, please follow those tips. All right.
Freelancing. How it started for me was I wasn't allowed to have a job since I was in my second year of college and I wanted project experience. So I was just talking to people in different communities and we were discussing about projects. And at one point in time, someone offered me money. So that took me quite a while to digest. How is this legal? You are paying me to write code for a project that we were talking about. So that's how it started. That was my first gig. It literally happened very randomly by interacting on the internet and the person liked my responses. Ideally on online communities, I'm sure you've seen this in your Discord. People are asking questions and there's this dopamine rush that you get out of getting information and sharing it. So I was just sharing what I had learned since I was also reading about the same. And the person thought, hey, would you like to get paid for this? That's how it started. And later on, they really liked my work. That was my first gig. They introduced me to more people. And then I found Upwork, ended up working on different projects with different companies and people through that. And also through just general introductions. So that's how it happened for me.
Nice, great. So Upwork, Xteam, Fiverr, Freelancer. These are some of the freelancing platforms that you guys can explore. All right, so we are done with all our questions. Is there any end remarks that you would like to make before we end this video?
I would just like to thank you for your amazing content. I've enjoyed it a lot. I'm sure the audience is learning a lot. Would just recommend them to check out your videos. It's a great way of learning. And yes, this is a long... Many people look at how to become data scientist in X months. It's a constant process, right? Dhawal and I were talking the other day. He said, I'm always constantly learning. He's learning to make these videos for us. So it's a lifelong process. You can get a job as a data scientist in a few months, but you'll always keep learning as a data scientist. So take your time and really enjoy the process.
I always say that you should take the life, your entire life as your, it's your life itself is a university and you are a lifelong student. You enroll into learning. If you live with that spirit, I think life will be more worth living. You know, it will be more fun. So one 100%. Should never stop learning. And it's not learning just about the technology. It's about learning anything else, communication, relationship. You know, it applies to everything else. Bill Gates, I was giving the example of Bill Gates. Bill Gates reads, 50 books every year. He's more than 70. And
he's
a madman. Yeah. You would think, why does this guy need to read books? He should be writing 50 books because he has achieved so much in his life. But he feels, at the age of 70, being richest man, now he's probably third richest after Tesla and Amazon madness. But he still feels that he has so many things to learn. So just if someone is saying, oh, I don't want to read books and learn, well, are you better than Bill Gates, right? So reading books is, it's my favorite. I try to read at least 3-4 books, and these are self-development books. These are not technical books. Technical books, technical reading we do all the time. But I always say that never stop learning.
Absolutely. I was just mentioning through the podcast, I think I've done 130-ish episodes, and just communicating has evolved so much for me. Just having a conversation doesn't come naturally to me. I think I'm still not good at it. I think I'm improving. But even those skills, they take a lot of time to develop. Maybe I'm a slow learner. Maybe soft skills come slowly to me. But everyone has their own speed of learning. So it takes a lot of time to be good at anything.
I was horrible. If you look at the first few YouTube videos, I was horrible. My pace was slow and I was using a lot of filler words, and once what I did is I listened to my own recording for 2 minutes. I found there were 50 so in it. Then I tried to re-record. Okay. I want to re-record it 10 times until I get my so to be reduced to less than 5. And it took that effort to get to that level. And sometimes right now people say, oh, you talk really well. But it's not, it doesn't happen magically. It's been 3-4 years now.
But
constantly...
Dhawal, how did you get from that multiple edits to today through all of these videos that you've been constantly putting out, right? Through all of that effort, like you said.
Yes. So now I do not take any shot. It's first time I get it. I'm not lying. I'm not trying to praise myself, but I get it right in one shot most of the time. Previously, I had to do 4-5, and it was a lot of frustration, recording, because this is your side gig. You have a 9-to-6 job. You're spending time on your weekends. You want to watch a movie maybe, but then this video is not coming right and it's getting 20 views in 6 months. It's so much demotivating, but the idea is these things have a snowball effect. Absolutely. I remember I got my first 1,000 subscribers in, I think it took me 1 year. And nowadays, in 1 day, I get 1,000 subscribers. So you see that exponential, that compounding impact. And when we look at successful people or people who have achieved something, we are always looking at their end state. We are not looking at the journey. It's the journey that matters. And I think you made a very good point that data science is a continuous learning process. Many times people ask me, So many people have asked me this question. How much time does it take to learn data science? And I'm like, I made a video that, okay, learn data science in 6 months. But that video is about learning the base skills, setting up a foundation. After that, it's a lifelong process, you know?
Absolutely.
All right.
To your point, just to add to that, it's also the effort that you made throughout these 3-4 years, that constant effort. Many people end up giving up midway. You could have just watched your video and thought that, hey, I'm not good at this. Maybe it's not worth my time. Maybe I should watch Queen's Gambit this weekend. But you kept at it. I can still see myself in that phase and I enjoy doing this. But I put out a trailer recently and it took me 300 hours to edit. 300 hours to edit. It just got 200 views, less than the number of hours that I put in. But now I know that, hey, it does take a ridiculous amount of time to figure things out. And then they come into a force of habit. So, and that's true to anything, not just data science, right? Being good at anything just takes a lot of time.
Exactly. All right. Great. This was awesome having a conversation with you, Sanyam. We'll probably have more collaboration in future as well. Maybe we can, as a group, participate in some Kegel competition and show it live on YouTube. That would be a fun experience. Yeah. All right. All right.
Thanks
so everyone
again for having me.
Thank you, everyone. Check out the links in the video description. We have links of Sayam's Twitter. He communicates through Twitter, his podcast, and few other links. I will provide a link of fast.ai video course. So again, just to summarize, fast.ai is a learning platform where you can learn deep learning, as well as it's a framework which is built on top of PyTorch, so makes writing code easy. And it is community. So it is like three things. We'll put a link of that website in a video description. Thank you very much. I will stop recording now.